Hello and welcome to the Pure Championship podcast, the number one podcast on the best league, or some would now say leagues, in the world. Since we last podcasted, the craziest league in the world has only got crazier with it now essentially split in two. 2 points separate league-leading Kilmarnock in fifth-placed Arbroath, whilst no less than 14 points separate Arbroath and sixth-placed Dunfermline, who are separated from bottom spot by just a single point. Ali, the league that we know and love is well and truly on form. We're almost halfway into the season and it's as mental as ever. And the question I want to pose to you to begin the podcast is the current status of the table essentially been into a good or a bad thing for the league? How does it kind of reflect on the league?
I think firstly you think, oh yeah, it's good for the league. It keeps it exciting and yeah, it keeps things interesting, but there is maybe an argument to be made that it does lead to some games being quite, how should we put it, or rather teams approaching games a little bit more conservatively than they might otherwise, because they know that if they lose a game, then, well, you know, they could start to lose ground. That, you know, one loss could be not fatal, but it could mean a lot more than it would ordinarily mean. So maybe teams are slightly reticent to go full attacking mode, which you can understand, but I mean, I think I'm probably trying to be too balanced there. I think on the whole, it has to be seen as a good thing. You want the league to be tight, and we've, as you say, Cammy, we've essentially got too many leagues with very little separating sixth from tenth and very little separating fifth from first. So on the whole, I mean, that's absolutely what you're looking for. It's like when you used to read like 4-4-2, for example, and you would say, oh, wait till you see what's going on in the Brazilian league. There's only 4 points between top and bottom or something crazy. So I think it's good for the league in that sense. Maybe some teams will approach games a little bit more defensively than they might otherwise have done. But on the whole, you know, if the league can keep as tight as this for, you know, at least a few more months, then absolutely, you know, we're all here for it, Cammy.
I'm the exact same as you. As much as I'd maybe like to see that kind of competition spread across the whole league rather than kind of too many leagues, when you've got two leagues in one league, which we are firmly of the belief is the best league in the world, you can't really complain too much. I think some would maybe say it says a lot about the quality of the league and that we've got five essentially pretty bad teams at the bottom and five better than obviously the worst teams, but still not very good.
No.
I think over the course of the season, there's not really been any single team who's truly stood out ahead of the season. We weren't really thinking, right, this team's going to run away with the title, and we've been proven right, so at least we've finally predicted something right on the podcast. We do still, of course, have just over half the season to go, so I don't think, given the nature of the Championship, we should write anything or anyone off, but it does seem to me like we've already got a top five and a bottom five. Like, I can't see Mad Dunfermline now sitting in sixth after a bit of a revitalisation under John Hughes. I really can't see us breaking that 14-point gap between ourselves and Arbroath. And even the teams just below us on the similar points, I can't see that. So, I mean, radical things need to happen, I think, for anything to kind of be possible for a bottom-half team to end up in the top half. So let's go into a little fantasy world, Ali, where in worlds where pigs are flying, everyone's rocking about in super jets. And I'm going to ask you, what would be your suggestion to get the bottom half back in touch with the top half? Go as wild as you like.
You've given me license to do just about anything there, Cammy, but my suggestion's going to be quite mundane, probably. But what I would say is, why don't we come the last round of fixtures, so the last of the four round of fixtures, if you like, Cammy, we say, right, okay, Dublin points, so a win gets you 6 points and a draw gets you 2 points. Quite math there, Cammy, but that only applies to teams in the bottom half of the table. So, and obviously that can that can then change the dynamics of games hugely, but I think if you start offering people 6 points for a win, you might see Morton going all out and playing some beautiful free-flowing attacking football. If pigs are flying, then this could potentially happen, Camille. I think in terms of the realms of possible happenings, Morton playing free-flowing attacking football would probably be somewhere behind pigs flying. But I think that's probably what you would need to do. I mean, the gap isn't so much you know, it's not just a gap, it's a chasm. It's a canyon at the moment, Cammy. And even with Dunfermline looking better under John Hughes, it's still early days. It's, I think it's too early to determine whether or not this is the stereotype, you know, the cliched manager bounce. I'm getting my phrases mixed up there. It's too early to determine if this is the sort of the cliched new manager bounce or if this is something more sustainable, something more long term. I think it obviously, if they're going to bridge that gap, it would need to be more long term, and you would need to see the teams in the top five continuing to drop points, which, in fairness, Cammy, they have been doing. Quite a few of the teams have been dropping points, certainly in recent weeks and over the start of the season as a whole. So I think if you say, right, okay, come the last nine games of the season, we're going to offer double points, then potentially that makes it more interesting. But I mean, the gap's so big just now, you might even be having to say, do you know what, the last 18 games of the season, the last half of the season, the second half of the season, we'll give you 6 points for a win and 2 points for a draw. And if you score more than 3 goals, we'll give you an extra 2 points, so you could potentially get 8 points. It's not going to happen, Cammy. It's not some pre-season tournament at the Emirates. But if it were to happen, then maybe we would see some significant movement in the table.
We've kind of had a similar train of thought. Mine was the same in you, in that teams in the bottom half get double points, but only against teams in the top half. So Horton beat Raith Rovers and would get 6 points. But here's the twist, and that's going to just add even more chaos. The extra 3 points come from the team in the top half's points tally. So could you imagine the chaos of the team in the bottom half beating kind of teams in the top half, going on some mad winning run and taking kind of points, well, multiple points off them. Another one that I'd come up with was the bottom half team get to pick any player from their top half opposition and field 12 men. The 12th man must 12 give men. His all. Or his, 12 men.
Oh, jeez.
The 12th man must give his all, or his parent club will be deducted points from half arsenate. So just for example.
Who's officiating whether or not he's given his all? Because like that, surely that's subjective. How could you have somebody sitting there saying, Ollie Shaw is not putting his all this week? Who's judging that? Is it like the judges you get at the Olympics for the diving? They seem to be quite good, quite on the ball. Why don't we get them involved? Remember that time? That was a bit like when, remember we had like, it was like referees from somewhere else came along to officiate, and obviously they're like football referees, so they know football, but I feel like bringing in, you know, umpires or something from tennis would be similarly impressive, or not impressive, but it would be quite fascinating. So let's try and make that happen, Cammy.
So that my suggestion for that was going to be the fans.
Oh, you can't the fans. If there's anything that's certain in life other than death and taxes, it's fans being fickle and not a trustworthy source of judgment, surely.
Right, but listen, we're making this mental. We're in a fantasy land. Imagine Ollie Shaw's drafted to be in fair, the South and scores a hat trick against Kelly, and couldn't say fans go, nah, he should have scored 4 or 5. Yeah. Kelly get deducted even more points. They're losing 6 points because they've been beaten by a team in the bottom half. Just imagine the chaos and Ollie Shaw's going back to Kilmarnock, absolutely hated.
Oh,
and just imagine the scenes. So,
Cammy, the conflicts of interest here are, infinite.
As I said, Ali, it's a fantasy world. Anything can happen.
Morton can play free-flowing football.
maybe going a bit too far even in this fantasy world. I think this is something that's open to interpretation. If any of the listeners have some wild ideas, throw them at us, because we've let our imaginations run wild. And I mean, it's something that you'd only probably manage to replicate in Football Manager, if that. So all for just making something absolutely wild. But on that note, let's do something equally as wild and try and predict the table. We here at the Pure Championship podcast are famously bad at predicting things, so I feel it's only right that we take a stab at how we think the league table is going to look come the end of the season. So, Ali, I'll let you go first. How do you think it's going to look?
Do you want me to just run all the way through the table?
Run all the way through. Go for it.
Oh, right. Okay. So, I have a feeling that Partick Thistle are going to finish top. Just think that they'll probably somehow do it. I think they look certainly the most emphatic at times. They're also capable of dropping points when they perhaps shouldn't, but every team seems to be doing the same. Certainly, teams that would hope to go up, everyone seems capable of dropping points. So I think Thistle top, and then, probably the other Thistle, Inverness Caledonian Thistle, put them second. I'll put Raith Rovers third, I'll put Kelly fourth, and I'll put Arbroath fifth. The only reason I'm putting Arbroath fifth is because of the fact that obviously they are still part-time. I think they've been excellent so far this season. I think they'll continue to be excellent, but I just have a feeling that they'll fall ever so slightly short. I could be wrong. Hopefully I'm wrong, not in terms of Arbroath getting a playoff place at the expense of Kilmarnock, at the expense of somebody else. Hopefully I'd love to see Arbroath in the playoffs. But I think so. We'll go Partick Thistle, Inverness Caledonian Thistle, Raith Rovers, Kelly, Arbroath, and then Dunfermline sixth, probably Hamilton Accies seventh. Quite a fall from grace after I predicted they would top the table. That was a horrendous shout. I'm surprised you still ask me on the podcast quite regularly, Cammy, after that shout. So we'll put Accies seventh, eighth. Ayr United probably, because if I say they're either in ninth or tenth, I'll be accused of being impartial, or not being impartial, I'll be accused of being biased. I think Ayr will probably somehow finish in eighth. Then ninth, probably put Queens. Always seem to just somehow avoid finishing last, don't they? And then 10th place, just purely based on what I've seen so far from them this season. And I must apologise to Chris Sampson, but I think Morton are going down. Unless, of course, there is a managerial change and they do get rid of Gus McPherson. I cannot see Morton finishing anything other than bottom of the table, Cammy.
Quite a different table from what I've got in front of me. So I've got Raith Rovers finishing top, and now that makes me sick to my stomach to say that. But when you consider how they've played, they've been quite consistent. They've also added Ethan Ross in, Dario Zanata's on fire, and they were doing really, really well last season, and I think they can kind of take advantage of the other teams around them kind of slipping up a wee bit. Going to go Kelly second. I think with the team they've got, it should be capable. Third, I'm saying Arbroath. Let's get kind of fully on board the Dick Campbell hype train. Arbroath have been absolutely fantastic. You consider how tight the table is at the moment. They've taken points off of Killian and Inverness in recent weeks, two of the kind of title rivals. I don't see any reason why they shouldn't be finishing in the playoffs as a minimum. I think come the end of the season, it's still going to be very close. Fourth, I'm going to go with Partick. Fifth, I'm going to go with Inverness. After their good start to the season, they've kind of tailed off, struggled to pick up points, and were, of course, the first team to lose to Dunfermline. So, to me, that says a lot. Six, I'm going to go for Dunfermline. I think of the best of the rest, I think we probably are the best of the rest. I'm not even caring if folk are going to accuse me of bias. Seventh, Queen of the South, like you say, they always kind of find a way of not finishing bottom. They're currently bottom, but I think there's a few good players in that team, and usually they end up going on some wild run that keeps them up and whatnot. So them seventh, then kind of for the final three positions, you could really put them in any order. Hamilton eighth, Morton ninth, and then Ayr 10th. Ayr, every time I've seen them, I've just not been convinced. On the Saturday there when Dunfermline beat them 3-0, just thought they were so poor. This was an Ayr team who absolutely pumped the pars earlier on in the season, but just not convinced. I think Morton are probably just not quite as bad, but I mean, it's a coin flip between Morton and Ayr, especially just two very bad teams. But with our terrible league predictions out the way, we took to Twitter to ask for some listener questions and got a few absolute cracking questions. So I'm just going to start piling through these in no kind of particular order. And I think it's only right, we kind of touched on them a little bit a few seconds ago. Arbroath and John Fraser, listener of the show and an Inverness fan, asks, how long can Arbroath keep up this pace if/when Joel Newble returns to Livingston?
I think obviously Newble does have a huge role to play there. But I think the most important aspect at Arbroath is Dick Campbell. I think as long as he's there, they'll always be a difficult team to play. They'll always be quite a fun team to watch, or not always a fun team to watch, but they're still a relatively fun team to watch compared to some of the teams in the Championship. And I think even without Newble, if as long as they could find a replacement of sorts, and they seem to, certainly the last couple of seasons, they've been able to find replacements, they've been able to adapt when they've lost players or when lone players have returned to their parent clubs. So I think even without Nuble, I think as long as Dick Campbell's there, Arbroath will still be there or thereabouts in the Championship, particularly when you consider the lack of direction at some of the other clubs who would maybe be hoping to make a charge towards that top half of the table. I think Dick Campbell's so important. You know, I'm stating the obvious there, but as long as he's at Arbroath, yeah, I think they'll always be there or thereabouts, Cammy.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. Joel would obviously be a massive, massive miss for Arbroath.
Absolutely.
If you've not already heard the podcast we done with Joel a few weeks ago, be sure to just scroll back down that the kind of Pure Football podcast feed and you'll be able to find that interview. A really, really fascinating interview with Joel. But if and when he returns to Livy, let's not forget how great Arbroath have just been as a unit. It's not just been Joel who's got them into the position they are. Michael McKenna is one of my front runners for Championship MVP. He's scored a ton of goals, setting up loads of goals. And like you say, Dick Campbell, so long as he's the man that makes this team tick, he gets the best out of the players. And like I mentioned earlier on, they took results off of Killin Inverness recently. I think it was actually the first ever win away to Killy was the starter Arbroath were kind of putting on social media at the weekend. So I think the sky really is the limit for this Arbroath team. And as a Championship lover, I hope it continues for as long as possible. Arbroath's unlikely success, some would say, is to me what makes football. Why get down on this team? Let's just keep hoping that they continue to excite us and entertain us. And like you say, they've managed to replace players in the past when they've went. Last January, they brought in Jack Hamilton from Livingston, coincidentally. He kept them up with his goals. If Joel Nubley does go back in January, which he wasn't saying too much about it on the podcast, he said he'd be happy either way, whether he stayed or went back. You'd think Arbroath would find someone good enough to come in and get some goals for them. But yeah, moving on then, Ali. What question shall we take next? I'll go for a Kilmarnock one for you. Come on, the Rocks on Twitter asks, how has Tommy Wright signed 43 players and Killy's main creative outlet is still Chris Burke?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think Chris Burke's obviously very professional. He's kept himself in great shape. He's aged like a fine wine. He's matured like a fine wine, hasn't he? Been really important for Killy in the top flight, and you could argue even in the Championship. I know he's had quite a considerable spell out with injury so far this season, but if we are to go back up, Chris Burke would be central to any promotion that we do or do not achieve. And I think that's the answer. You can look elsewhere. You can try to bring other players in, and obviously Danny Armstrong had a run in the team and was fine, but I just think that Burke's a level above most players in the division, let alone most players in that Kilmarnock squad, to give you the short answer, Cammy.
That's fair enough. I mean, if you look at his stats, I know they're not the be-all and end-all. They maybe don't jump out to you as the main creative outlet, but like you say, and like Come On the Rocks said, he still is. And although he's coming up for 30 years old in a matter of days, I wouldn't seem too surprised to see him doing as well. He just is a really, really solid, good player. And I think, if anything, I'd say I'm more surprised about the others than seeing Chris Burke continuing to do quite well. I was expecting a lot more from both Blair Olsen and especially Liam Polworth when it came to creating and getting assists to their name. I think this is me going to out myself with my awful prediction. I think I said Polworth could be one of, if not the best players in the league this season, but certainly from what I've seen, that's not been the case. We know he's certainly capable in this league, as evidenced by the 12 assists he got back in the 18-19 season at Inverness, which ended him his move to Motherwell. And yeah, I'd say you're probably expecting more from others, which maybe makes it seem Kilmarnock are a lot more reliant on Chris Burke than they maybe need to be. But I mean, like you say, Chris Burke's a model professional and still a player with a few years in the tank anyway. I think we're quite quick to write off older players these days. There was a good tweet that I'd seen about how kind of your Football Manager, your FIFA games, they've led to kind of a generation on the past 10 years or whatever, just writing off anyone older than 30. And in the Championship, I've seen many great older players prosper for years and years. I think one that you can't not kind of mention is Bobby Lynn at Arbroath. Granted, he's maybe not doing as well this season, but he's well into his 30s and still doing really well. There's a whole host of other players that you could go on and on to list. Stephen Dobby, for example, a few seasons ago, absolutely unstoppable despite being older. So I certainly wouldn't write Burke off. And yeah, like you say, he's going to be key in any promotion bid that Killy have. So moving on, I'm going to go first on this one. And Owen Brown, Pure Football's head of content, asks, what has Yogi Hughes changed at the Pars? I think for me, Yogi's got everyone now pulling in the same direction. There was a lot of kind of disconnect between the players, the fans, and just the club in general when Peter Grant was in charge. There was a lot of falling outs, and obviously the product on the pitch didn't match what Peter Grant had said at the start of the season, and it just led to a lot of disillusion, a lot of people disappointed. Yet Yogi's coming in, it's been a breath of fresh air. He seems to be saying all the right things, and whilst the same can be said of Peter Grant, Hughes' comments just seem to be different, and there's going to be a Rafe Rovers fan sitting there going, yeah, he pulled the wool over our eyes as well. He said all those things and he still took us down. I mean, yeah, we're still far too early into this reign, but certainly the way he started it gives me a lot of hope for the immediate future of the club. The league is very, very tight, and really, you're talking a wee run of wins should be enough to kind of keep you up, even at this early stage. It is really mental. I'd like to say, after that air game we played, how I feel we should always be playing in our games. Just absolutely brilliant. And yeah, that's something that I think everyone's missed at Dunfermline. Peter Grant promised beautiful football. He'd kind of done really well at Alloa, but it just didn't come to fruition at the Pars. Also got to give a shout out to Yogi. Although not officially in charge, when we beat Inverness, he went in at half-time, had a word, and we came at a different team and won our first league game of the season. He just seems to have brought confidence back to this team, and confidence, as I'm sure you're aware, will be a huge thing for a team. What do you think?
Yeah, well, you've obviously watched a lot more of the Pars under John Hughes than I have. I mean, I'll hopefully get a glimpse of them on Friday. I'll hopefully be joining you for their game against Partick Thistle. All going well. We'll be watching that one together. But yeah, so I think until I've watched them in person, I'll reserve judgment for the time being. Part of me, maybe it's the cynic in me, but part of me thinks that it's too early to say whether or not this is a new manager bounce or something more long-term, something more sustainable.
So from one team benefiting from a new manager bounce to a team who might need to change the manager and a team who's already changed the manager this season, Come On The Rocks asks, who is worse off between Aaron Morton?
Probably just as bad as each other, Cammy. Both as hopeless as each other at the moment. I think Air probably marginally less endangered, shall we say, at the moment. But yeah, both teams clearly struggling. Both teams will be in that relegation fight for the entirety of the season. And yeah, I think Air have shown probably glimpses of better football that we haven't really seen from Morton. So with that in mind, I would probably say Air are, yeah, marginally less endangered than Morton, but both teams are in a difficult place, to state the obvious, Cammy.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is a tough one. Like I said earlier on, it's a coin flip between who's just as bad, but gun to my head, I'd have to say Air United. Just haven't been convinced at all by them at all this season, and this is coming from someone who obviously watched the team fail to win for the first 13 games. Jim Duffy's men, they're just on a really, really bad run of form, having lost four of their last five. They've not won since the middle of last month. And to me, it's a little surprise to see them doing so badly when they signed so many of Morton's cast-offs in the summer. The next few weeks are absolutely massive for them. Albion Rovers in the Cup this weekend, then they face Morton, Hamilton and Queen of the South, the kind of three teams round about them in the bottom half of the table. An unlikely three wins from three would be massive for them, but I really can't see them winning any more than one of these fixtures, despite how badly Morton, Hamilton and Queens have also been as of late. Morton, like we kind of say, really aren't much better off though. Although I'm kind of giving them the benefit of the doubt here on the basis that they showed they can dig in and get a result in an important match when they beat the Pars 3-1 away from home. So I'd say I have slightly more hope for them than I do Ayr, even if Morton, like you say, don't really play much football. Ayr maybe have a player or two more who could try and spark something. But moving on to the next question, Ali. John Fraser again asks, who's the best goalkeeper in the league? He thinks Inverness goalkeeper Mark Ridgers.
I'd probably have to disagree with him there, and maybe this is the Kilmarnock bias coming through again, Cammy, but I think Zach Heming is head and shoulders above any other goalkeeper in the league. I think he's going to go on and probably be a top goalkeeper. I can definitely see him going on and playing in the top flight down in England. Just everything about his game, does the basics well. He just installs, he instills confidence in his defence. And when you think about some of the goalkeeping options Kilmarnock had last season, it is night and day, Cammy. So for that reason, I would have to say Heming is by far and away the best goalkeeper in the league. People will maybe disagree with me on that one, but I'm going to say Zach Heming, best goalkeeper in the league by quite some distance, Cammy.
Fair enough. I mean, Heming's certainly in with a shout, but I'm not convinced that it's as big a gap that you're maybe saying. You've also seen more of him being a Kilmarnock fan, but
I'm just meaning overall ability. Maybe I'm getting too far ahead of myself. I'm just talking about trajectory as well. No disrespect to Mark Ridgers. He's 31 now. I think, he's had a fine career. His career has been good, but I just think that, and I could be totally wrong about Zach Heming, but I just think he's going to go to not the very top level, but I can see him definitely playing at the top level in England, playing in the top flight. And that's probably why I'm inclined to say that he's so far ahead of any other goalkeepers in the league. I mean, people will no doubt disagree with me on that one, but that's my opinion.
That's fair enough. I want to obviously give a shout out to Ridgers, who's been sold over the past few years and perhaps doesn't get the credit he deserves. Derek Gaston at Arbroath has been superb, as has Jamie McDonald at Raith Rovers. He was excellent when he had his loan spell at Alloa.
See, Cammy, that's the thing. When you speak about Jamie McDonald, I've been subjected to too many just woeful mistakes from McDonald. I remember when McDonald was a goalkeeper at Kilmarnock, if the opposition were awarded a free kick anywhere near your goal, you would be terrified. He's a great shot stopper, Jamie McDonald, so he's a good five-a-side keeper in that sense. And I'm sure he's a lovely guy, and he's had a really good career as well, relatively speaking. But I can't compare McDonald to Heming. They're not in the same league of goalkeepers, in my opinion, Cammy. Maybe I'm miles off the mark here, but I just don't think the two are in any way comparable in terms of ability.
That's fair enough. So moving on to the final question, once again coming from Come On The Rock. So cheers for all your questions for this episode. And it's going to finish on perhaps my favourite player in the league. And the question is Dom Thomas a Premiership quality player, or is he the new Bobby Lynn?
The question is, what would you rather be? And I think most people would probably rather be the new Bobby Lynn, Cammy. I think Dom Thomas, he had obviously his chance at Kilmarnock, and he always felt like when he was with Kilmarnock that he was almost there, and just give him a chance, give him a run of games, and he could be really important, and he could make it as a top flight player. But I just don't think he's quite good enough to be consistently playing for a top flight club. But yeah, I think, there's nothing wrong with being a very good Championship player. And, if Dunfermline are to ultimately go up, I don't think it'll be this season, but perhaps next season, if they were to gain promotion, I think Dom Thomas would absolutely deserve another chance at the top flight. I don't think he's, as I've said, a player who's going to consistently play for, a team aiming for the top six in the top flight. But I think, there is enough ability in there absolutely for Dom Thomas to potentially be, a player who can manage as maybe a player for a bottom six club in the top flight. But yeah, he's an exciting player and one of those players who you always think, yeah, maybe just a run of games and he could be excellent. But he never quite reached those consistent levels for Kilmarnock in the top flight. But times have changed, I suppose.
Yeah, I think the easiest way to sum it up is Dom Thomas is a Premiership player but doesn't have the consistency to be one. I mean, we're seeing him have a real purple patch of form at the moment. He's just absolutely unplayable at the moment. There's multiple guys marking him, and he's really taken the mick out of them with his trickery. He's scored some lovely goals. The goal up at Inverness to seal as our first win of the season was absolutely phenomenal and will be one of the goals of the season, undoubtedly. But at the same time, I've obviously seen him for, what, 18 months, nearly 2 years at the Pars, and I know what happens. Dom is a player you'll typically get a handful of good games from, and he just becomes ineffective, whether that's through being just marked out or he just can't kind of have that spark that he usually has. That said, like you say, has had that chance at the top flight before and just never really got that run, never managed to consolidate that position. But
exactly,
really keen to see what he does under John Hughes, who's obviously developed a lot of young guys. Dom's still only 25, so in the grand scheme of things, he's quite young, so still has time to fulfil that potential he absolutely has. Yeah. And not just be resigned to being a kind of top lower league player, which by all accounts he is, certainly from speaking to championship players and officials. They're all very high on Dom and know just how dangerous he can be. Certainly managers will point out and say, we've got to keep an eye on Dom Thomas. Teams will try and target him, and they know that he is the creative spark in this Dunfermline team. And under Yogi, it's going to be really interesting. They're both very determined and both have quite strong personalities. And I mean, if it clicks, it could be absolutely beautiful for the Pars and Dom Thomas. I want nothing more than to see Dom succeed and stay at the Pars for a very long time. He's a real fan's favourite. But then on the flip side, if it doesn't work, I can see things ending in tears. As much as I'd hate that, I just so want Dom to succeed. You've seen when he was substituted a few weeks ago, just how upset he got and how angry. He's a player that wants to be out there making a difference. And I think he's the player in that team you know can make the difference. And he's probably a player that every team in the championship would pick. And if we're going back to our fantasy land, he'd be the player out of the Pars team every single week. We'd be playing against him every week without a doubt, with our opposition.
Just to add something to that, Cammy, you do worry that he'll just always be this player who's always on the cusp of being a Premiership player, but he's just not quite good enough. And there's nothing wrong with that, Cammy. I mean, if you can be a high quality Championship player, you know, you can maybe have a cup run with your team as well. You know, you can still have a very good career in the sense that, you know, the likes, you know, we've mentioned a few guys on the podcast tonight already who, and granted, a couple of those guys have played at the top level, maybe only a handful of games at the top level, but they've still played at the top level. And they've still had really good careers, relatively speaking. So I don't think if Dom Thomas doesn't make it as, you know, a Premiership player, a consistent Premiership player, he would look back and think, oh, I didn't have a great career. I think, you know, he would still, there's still the potential to have a really good career in the Championship, but he does strike me, certainly, Cammy, as one of the players who stands out as being as close to a Premiership player without yet being a consistent Premiership player yet. So let's see how he does under John Hughes.
Yeah, I think that's fair. So just to kind of finish up, as for the kind of new Bobby Lynn comment, I quite like the comparison, and they're both kind of mercurial talents, clearly very talented guys. Just obviously in Bobby Lynn's case, he started out at Dundee, but never really got a chance much higher up the pyramid as his career went on and he was doing well at lower leagues. But Dom Thomas also had that chance, and yeah, it's not too late for him to do that. Like you say, being a high-end Championship player, there's nothing wrong with that. Lynn's earned cult status based on his performances in lower leagues, and he's going to be remembered for years to come. And would you rather that and be remembered for years to come, or be some kind of nobody that's spent most of their career in a bottom six team in the Premiership not doing much? For me, you'd rather be that new Bobby Lynn, like you say.
Absolutely.
So with that said, that brings an end to this bumper edition of the Pure Championship podcast. Be sure to let us know what your fantasy ideas are for bringing the table back in touch with one another. And we'll be back with you in 2 weeks' time. Thanks for listening.